This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. We got a call recently on a show with the governor from Richard in South Newfane. He wanted to bring up the state's new vehicle inspection system, which is supposed to be implemented statewide in March.
What my inspectors have told me is they have to purchase around a $2,000 computer, which they have to take a picture of the car now. They're going to be linked into Montpelier, and this starts in March. And some guy in Montpelier, or woman, is going to look at the picture and listen to what the mechanic has to say. I'd rather the mechanic, who's standing right there, who's looking at the car, can look underneath it, make the decision like they have for the last 40 or 50 years, than somebody who probably doesn't even work on cars, but is looking at a book to see if it passes. My feeling is that dealers have lobbied for this so they can kick a lot of these old cars off the road and force people to buy newer or used cars at inflated prices.
Richard is not atypical. Since we said we were going to be doing a show on the inspection system, we have been bombarded by emails. A lot of people are unhappy. But a lot are also trading on rumors or misconceptions. And then some people like the idea. The basic gist is that there's a new inspection system. Instead of carbon paper and pen, your mechanic will be putting details and pictures into a tablet. All the information will be stored centrally, and you'll get a printout when you leave. If you go to another mechanic, the info from the first repair shop will be online for the new mechanic to see, too. But before we get too far ahead of ourselves, let's bring on our guest for today, the head of the Department of Motor Vehicles, Robert Ide. He can probably better explain all of this stuff. Commissioner Ide, welcome back to Vermont Edition.
Thank you very much, Jane. It's a pleasure to join you today.
Let's get some of those basics down. There is this tablet that people will be putting information into, the mechanics. The tablet costs $1,600, and then they upload that information to a central database. Where does it go?
It does go to a central database. In listening to the comments of your caller at a previous show, there are a number of things that I hope we have a chance to go through, because some of the things that the caller had heard I don't believe are correct, and I certainly understand if he heard that, why he was concerned. But I think as we go through them one-to-one, it may alleviate some of those concerns. The first one I would like to address is the decision-making authority will rest at the local level with the certified mechanic. The message that he had received that someone in Montpelier is going to be looking over their shoulder and saying pass or fail into their earpiece is just patently false.
Okay, so when the information then is uploaded to the central database, what's the point of that if not to have somebody centrally giving you the yay or nay on passing and failing?
Well, what we will be looking for is trends. Information and data are very, very important in today's world. And although Vermont has had an inspections program since the 1930s, there really is very little data that we know about what's actually happening. If we were questioned today as to what is the principal reason that a vehicle fails an inspection, we truly don't know the answer to that. We have anecdotal information, but going forward, this system will be able to point us in the right direction. Is it ball joints? Is it tires? Is it lights? Is it a horn? Whatever the component is. But right now, that information is missing. The system will collect data, and it will help us to analyze a couple of things. And one part of this is something that I don't think is readily known about the automobile industry. The one that's most known is sticker shopping, or someone who might go from station to station until they get the sticker. What we're going to be able to analyze is if, in fact, there is a weakness in our program where a station is not performing to the standards of their neighbors and to our expectations. But conversely, we also hear anecdotally that there are some facilities that perhaps oversell on repairs. And so if we can see statistically that someone is rejecting on ball joints and doing ball joint works, perhaps that station deserves a visit as well to see if we can't get their performance more into compliance. You know, if we're trying to protect the consumer on both ends of those transition histories.
But the bottom line on who decides if your car passes or fails is your mechanic, your repair station decides. If there's a dispute, does it go to Montpelier? There is a picture that can be taken of things that are wrong with the car.
There certainly is the picture, and that becomes the history on an individual vehicle. We have inspectors that work in the regions of the state. If someone feels that for some reason they have been wrongly treated by an inspection station today, we encourage people to make contact with us or contact directly with those field inspectors. And they, in fact, will go to a dooryard to look at a vehicle or move it to a facility if they need to put it on a lift. So that service is available today, and it will continue to be available.
But generally, it's your mechanic making the decision.
Yes. And, you know, we have a wonderful, wonderful partnership with the mechanic community, with the service station, with the new car and new cars dealers, and they are vital to our program. Without that partnership with that private business, our program doesn't work. And we have a wonderful and rich history, and we greatly appreciate the integrity that they bring to this process.
Are there changes in what is actually being inspected or what a passing inspection will look like as this new program is implemented?
That is a great question, Jane, because the new program is really the electronics that allow the mechanic to walk through the exact same inspection that they are charged with doing today. There are no additions. There are no changes within the safety inspection components of the inspection. It will help the mechanic in a very systematic way going through. You know, we hear often that in smaller shops, it's very easy for an interruption to happen, and then that mechanic needs to remember exactly where they were in the process. This tablet will bring them back to the exact step and continue to walk them through the process that they've historically been doing. But in terms of the standards to which they will be making rational decisions, those standards have not changed because of this program.
Listeners, if you have questions about this new inspection program and the new sort of digitized way it's going to be done, we know many of you do. Our number is 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. Or you can post a note on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net. We got a note from Jackie who says, if the state were starting a vehicle inspection program today and proposed to use carbon paper and pencils, they'd be laughed right out of Montpelier. Come on, folks, get over it and join the 21st century. But another Jackie says, it looks like a nightmare to me. I went to get my rig done yesterday. I felt bad for the mechanic. The handheld computer was a joke. And Commissioner Ide, to your comments about what is or is not changing and whether the inspections are held to a different standard, Brendan in Central Vermont says, I'm a car enthusiast and a Vermont resident. To my understanding, the new AVIP system, this is the name of the new system, will simply read your car's computer and notify if any emission readiness systems are not ready or functioning properly, and if there are any check engine codes present. That doesn't particularly concern me, but what does is that I don't know what conditions would constitute a failed inspection. Does my car need to have no check engine lights and fully ready emissions monitoring systems in order to pass? Does this new procedure change to any other aspects of the inspection process? Brendan says, I fear inspection prices will go up. People will be upcharged by dealerships who will now have more power than ever to replace parts or fix things. And that the people most affected by this are at the lowest economic stature of our state. Do we really want to be financially burdening those who are already most disadvantaged? What do you say, Commissioner?
I say that's a very, very comprehensive editorial piece, and I'm not sure I remember all the components, Jane, so I hope you took good notes so you can point me in the directions that perhaps I missed.
Okay, so the first one is, you know, he says, okay, so you, the system, the tablet, you know, the tablet can read your VIN number and will then check and see if any emissions readiness systems are not functioning properly or if there's a check engine light and what the code is. But Brendan says, so what's what's the bar for passing? Does the car need to have no check engine lights and fully ready emission systems in order to pass?
Okay, let's go back just a little bit. I actually want to pick up on the comment that Jackie made about a system proposed with carbon paper would be laughed out of the state. the message that I want to convey about that is that Vermont is one of two states that are left using a paper-based handwritten system. Not every jurisdiction has a safety inspection program, but more than half the jurisdictions in the United States do. We, of course, are one of those states that has an inspection program. The tablet that is being deployed does, in fact, cost $1,680, and we acknowledge that that is a cost that we wish were less. It is what it is. It's a tool that will be used like so many tools in a garage, but we do understand and admit that it is a cost that was not being borne last year. The governor certainly has deep concerns about affordability, and he has expressed those interests to us. This was a program that was started in the previous administration, but I have to back people up that as a former member of the Senate Transportation Committee more than 15 years ago, I heard about automated inspections during this time. So it's a subject that has been opened and spoken about many, many times. Now, to move up to the check engine light, the check engine light is a showing of issues within the emission standards of the automobile, and the check engine light can come on for a number of reasons. The check engine light failure has been a standard that has been in place for many years. I believe it goes back to the late 1990s. So a check engine light failure is not a new thing. We did make a compromise within the program to say that for this first year of implementation, a check engine light is not an automatic failure. It is an opportunity for a mechanic to communicate with the vehicle owner to say that the check engine light is on. We're sure that the operator knows that to begin with. But there is a one-year moratorium on this provision to allow people, particularly those people that were referenced and perhaps are economically disadvantaged, to give them the opportunity to try to get that situation corrected. But in theory, that vehicle should have been failing the inspection for the last few years if that check engine light was on. So we think that this actually does help to move the program forward, to integrate this, I wouldn't call it a glitch, but it's a difference of opinions. And we did a total of 51 outreach meetings with the inspection stations around the state. I tried to go to a lot. I think I made more than half of them. And we heard a number of stories. And we certainly heard from some inspection stations that were appalled to learn that some cars were getting through the system with a check engine light on today. And we heard from other stations where they very, very clearly said in a very heartfelt way they just couldn't bring themselves to fail the car for that. So there is a discrepancy in how the check engine light has been treated over the last few years. And we are allowing for a one-year moratorium to allow those people to come into compliance.
On a similar note, David in Wallingford says, I believe that the changes to the inspection system are hugely inappropriate. To examine engine computers to look for minor ignition malfunctions, minor emissions issues, and other concerns that are not safety related is completely unnecessary and represents a fundamental change from past policy. Minor environmental quality improvements should not be carried on the backs of the poor. Perhaps more emissions controls for generators at ski resorts. And Mark says the inspection stations should be spending their time checking steering components, exhaust, rust through, brake and brake lines. Chasing a vacuum leak or doing an expensive tune-up because a check engine light is on will not be affordable for most Vermonters and won't make the vehicle any safer on the highway. More foolish legislation coming out of Montpelier. Why don't they take a year off so the taxpayers can catch their breath? What I want to hear from you on this is, you know, is this a change? You've said no, that the check engine light and emission standards are not changing and that shops are already supposed to be looking at this in the inspection. So more to the point, is there a value in having cars fail for these reasons that are not necessarily safety related?
Well, certainly DMV focuses on the safety components of the car. The emissions quality are actually under the auspices of the Agency of Natural Resources, and we've had one of their experts working with us through that program, and I'm more than happy to put that person in touch directly with the people who are raising the issues that may have some misinformation. It's valuable information, and it's a healthy conversation, but I'm not sure it's entirely accurate, but I will always support free speech no matter where that takes us.
Let's go to some calls. Ellen is on the line with us from Morgan. Hi, Ellen. Go ahead.
Yes. Hi. Thank you. My husband, Charles, and I live in Morgan, And, you know, we can afford to put four new tires on our car when all of a sudden the inspection says, measures it and says, this doesn't meet the standard. But he also added, you know, they're not dangerous, but they don't meet the standard. But we have a neighbor, terrific young couple who are struggling. And both of them have jobs, and he's just learned that his truck won't pass unless he gets $3,000 worth of body work. Now, I just think Vermont has sort of lost its mind because there's all sorts of discussion about how young people can't get jobs here, they can't afford to live here, and we're losing our youth. And here we go, making it more difficult for people to get going with jobs.
Ellen, let me stop you and ask you a question here, because what I'm hearing from you is that the inspection program is onerous and is too difficult on people who have cars who may not have a lot of money to repair them. So is your main beef here not necessarily with a new system that's digitized, but with the inspection program in general as it stands?
I guess it is.
Yeah.
Yes, I guess it is. If you're inspecting things that, as the earlier caller said, are not incredible safety issues, but, you know, this kid has a car that gets him down the road to a farm he works at. When it's computerized, when the gas stations get put out of business because if they cut a kid a break and then it turns out they did that, they lose their license, which has happened. With all the crises that we have in Vermont, like the opiate crisis, why are we focusing on this?
Yeah, Ellen, I take your point. Thank you for that, and thanks for the clarification. And Commissioner Ide, this is one of the interesting things about this program, as we've seen comments coming in. You know, some of them are questions about the actual changes that are coming along with this inspection program, and we'll talk a little bit more about some of them, like the fact that you'll now be able to look up a car's VIN number and see its inspection history. But a lot of the pushback and a lot of the frustration seems to be with the inspection program as it stands now. And I'm hoping you can address this idea of, is this too onerous that we're making people pay for repairs that they can't afford for things that are not necessarily safety issues, or for things that can actually, you know, the car could actually stay on the road for longer? You know, there seems to be frustration with the inspection process that is coming out now because there are changes.
I wanted to start with the caller's concern about the young person in Morgan. You know, this vehicle has, in the opinion of the inspection station, failed on the old program. The new program has not started yet. We're certainly in the beta testing phase, and we're rolling it out. And I'd like to get into the number of some of the stations that we've heard positive responses from.
Right, but but that idea of the inspection program as it stands now, I mean, Ellen said, yeah, this isn't about the new program. This is about inspections in general.
Let me tell you something that I've learned in the 7-plus years that I've been commissioner, because when you have a job like this, you are forced to look at things differently. And I have a responsibility not only to the person that's trying to get their vehicle inspected to go to work, and I'm very understanding and sympathetic of that. As a multi-generational Vermonter, I've seen my high school classmates struggle with this exact same situation. I also have, and I've learned over time, that I have an enormous responsibility to the person that's traveling in the other lane. We've all heard about incidents where a vehicle, the brakes were applied, it crossed the center line, something happened. And it's a choice. It's a conflict. We would all work through it in a very different way. But I would say that my personal awareness of my responsibility to the safety of the public that is meeting an inspected vehicle has grown appreciably in my time in the job.
But Ellen says it's not about safety. So is that, are you saying actually these are safety features?
Well, you know, I haven't seen the vehicle that she speaks of, and I haven't talked to the mechanic that made these recommendations. I'd be more than happy to do that with one of my inspectors so that I could learn more about it. But it sounds to me like there was something significant that someone suggested a repair.
We're talking today about the state's new vehicle inspection system being implemented in just over a month. We're also looking at the inspection system as it stands now. Seems like there's a lot of question about that. So we're sort of tackling both sides of this coin as we have a conversation today with Commissioner Robert Ide of the DMV. You can let us know what questions you have. We're getting a lot of them. Our number is 1-800-639-2211, or you can post a note on the Vermont Edition Facebook page. I'm Jane Lindholm, and this is Vermont Edition. Today, we're looking at the details of the new vehicle inspection system being implemented in Vermont. It's a streamlined digital system, but not everyone thinks it's a great idea. We're hearing why, and we're clearing up some misconceptions with DMV Commissioner Robert Ide. Share your questions at vpr.net by clicking on Vermont Edition, or call 1-800-639-2211. Before we get back to your questions and comments, we're going to hear from one shop owner who's been testing this system before it gets implemented statewide. Mike Mazza is the owner of Mike's Auto Parts in Colchester, and he's on the line with us now. Hi, Mike.
Hi, how are you?
I'm great. Why did you want to be a guinea pig for this system?
This is something I think was important to us. I think it put everybody on a level playing field. I've been interested in this for quite some years. It was great to be part of it from the beginning to get the learning curve going.
Did you get any financial benefit for being a beta tester?
No. Nope.
So you still had to pay the $1,600 for the tablet?
I do. Not until we're done the beta testing is when we'll be billed for it. But no, nothing's changed there.
So with that, the cost of that tablet, how do you pass that on, or how much will you add to the charge of an inspection for consumers?
We haven't actually totally decided that. It'll probably be based on what we do for inspections and if we can get some kind of an idea of how long we think the tablet will last. We obviously have a $2.21 charge that will be associated from the company on top of our price of our sticker. That will go there, but I'm only expecting it's going to be a few extra dollars. So my guess is maybe another $10 to the inspection.
What do you charge now? Around 35 or 40?
Correct, 35.
So you're thinking it might be 45 for the consumer?
That's what we're thinking, yep.
Yeah. And this $2.21, we should clarify, that's a charge that's associated with this program, not something that you have a choice in whether you pass along or not.
That's correct.
I mean, I guess you could eat that charge, but that is...
You could eat that, but that's right. That's going to stay there no matter what. That's right.
Mike, do you like the new system?
I do. Yep, I sure do. I think that, the company that they went with, that the state went with, has really done their homework, and that they've thought everything. That this beta testing setup that that we're going through now, we get a call every day from the company. So the follow-up and the questions that we ask get followed up the next day. So everything is thought out, I guess, is what I'm trying to say, is that the whole program from start to finish that we've seen, and part that I've been part of back a year ago when they started talking about this, till now, is really, I think, going to put everybody on a level playing field, which is important to me. I think it's going to help to make the cars safer. I think that everybody's going to be held accountable. I like that. I like the fact that if I say something, and I can document it, I can picture it, and everybody can see that. So we're all going to be on that same field.
So what do you say to, we're hearing from a lot of people, and I don't pretend that this is a representative sample of Vermonters, but these are people who are sending us notes because they're concerned about this for one reason or another. Can you allay the fears of regular car owners?
I think the way I can say that is that the biggest thing that I see just here in my own store, and even from shops and even from some state people, is that it's a misconception. I don't think they're completely informed on how this is all going to go down. They are thinking, I've heard things from inspections are going to cost $100 to, everything is totally different now, and the laws have all changed. And, it's still a safety inspection, and it's still that does not change. No matter how we look at it, that doesn't change. That's the importance of it. The only thing is now is that it's done digitally so that it we can all look at what everybody else did. So everybody's held accountable. So I don't see where that's going to be a problem at all. Or should be a problem once they learn about it.
And what about for shops that are small or maybe don't do that many inspections, and that $1,600 hurdle may be a little bit bigger for them to overcome?
Well, that's true, and that may be an issue for some. And there is other ways of paying. It doesn't have to be a $1,600 $100 shot all at one time. So it can be split up. And that may be a problem, and that may make the choice that some people may not choose to continue to do inspections. You know, it's not a law that we have to do them. I mean, this is something we take on as added benefit to our customers. So
yeah, not all repair shops, not all mechanics have to do inspections.
Absolutely not. Nope.
Well, Mike, I appreciate you taking the time to talk to us about this and sharing your perspective as a shop owner. Thanks very much for talking with us.
Well, thanks for having me on.
Mike Mazza owns Mike's Auto Parts in Colchester. And again, he's been beta testing the new inspection system. Commissioner Ide, we're going to come back to you, but let's get a couple of calls in here as we do.
I do want to
Well, let me get a couple of calls first because we have a ton of listeners and little time. Here's Robert in Bethel first, and then I promise I'll come back to you. Robert, go ahead.
Hey, Jane, great show. Hi, Commissioner. I just want to say, well, first question I have is, what is the cost to the state's taxpayers to implement the software that you've adopted? That's my first question.
Why don't you give us your second question, too?
The second question is, well, actually, the second question is really a comment. I truly think that the voters should be making these decisions, that the State House and the Commissioner's office shouldn't be electing in their offices, their closed-door offices up there about the people in Vermont. I think it's time for the people in Vermont to start making decisions. Now, this has been going on for over a year, as the last caller said. Now, it's only been probably 3 months that it's been out in the public, and it's going to start in March. So here again, the playing field of the people is more important than leveling the playing field of the adaptation to the state's requests. And I think it's really important for all Vermonters to think about that, to make their voices. And I think it should be a referendum to the people, not the commissioner's office and the rest of the State House up there.
Robert, I hear you, and thanks for that. Now, Vermont doesn't have a referendum system, so there is no way that we could do that as a statewide referendum process. I suppose you could do something at town meetings where each town puts on a referendum as just a way to get a sense of the people's will. But I take your point. Commissioner Ide, I promise I would come back to you. And if you could also answer Robert's question about how much does this actually cost the taxpayers to implement this new step?
We have expended absolutely no money to the vendor at this point in time. We have invested our own staff time and travel expense to participate in the meetings. But the vendor signed a contract with the state of Vermont where their total reimbursement for establishing the program and writing the program and doing the beta work and the outreach efforts and providing the support services going forward, their entire fee is being paid by the $2.21 per inspection charge, but there have been no state dollars expended to the vendor at this moment.
Let's go to Todd calling in from Rutland. Hi, Todd. Go ahead.
Hi. I have a couple of points to make on that. First off, as far as the vendor goes and the expense of this tablet, when you finance it, because we're a small shop that can't afford $1,600 up front, it is over $2,000 by the time it's paid off. And secondly, the fact that the vendor has dropped the ball on every single part that I've done to try to sign up for this equipment. From initially signing up to go to the seminar, they didn't have us signed up when we signed up online, completely through to getting called last week stating that they didn't have my tax ID number when it was right in the forms that I gave them. And one other point I would like to make is I know that they think they're digitally going to be able to track cars that don't pass inspection. But seeing how we have a fee every time we plug that machine in, we are going to pre-inspect the cars, and the only cars you're going to know about that aren't passing are the people we don't like. Because as my regular customer, if he's got something wrong, I'm going to tell him to get it fixed, and when he comes back in and it's repaired, then we will inspect his car. But we're not going to plug that machine in until we know the car is going to pass the inspection.
In other words, Todd, you're going to do the inspection as you normally would, you know, looking it over and maybe writing notes, and then if it passes, you'll plug it into the tablet and pass it and do all of the paperwork that's needed digitally. And if not, you're just going to say, let's put a pin in it, come back when it's fixed?
Yeah, exactly. Because most customers, if you hand them a fee and they don't receive a service for that fee, they are going to flip out on you and you're going to lose them as a customer.
Todd, I appreciate your perspective as somebody who has an inspection station. Commissioner Ide, what do you think?
I'm very disappointed to hear that Todd had the experience he did with the vendor. And if he would call our office later today, I will be sure that the vendor calls him directly. I believe in that personal service. It was a hallmark of my own life in private business. I haven't been a bureaucrat forever, just the last few years. So I will promise Todd that if he gets me his contact information, I'll be sure that someone from the vendor reaches out to him today. And I hear what he's saying about the payment. What I wanted to be sure your listeners heard, Jane, was that we have today about 1,400 inspection stations. And when we started this program, we certainly were aware that we would lose some. They might have been smaller stations. They might have been stations that were concerned about their own quality. We're hoping that we're not losing them for economic reasons because we do value that partnership so very, very strongly. Of that 1,400 stations, at this point in our sign-up process, we are over 970 stations that have committed to start the program. Our vendor says in previous experience that that rate in their expectation would be 50% to 60%. In Vermont, it's reaching almost 70%, and we're very, very satisfied with that and very pleased. We have had 21 stations tell us that they are backing out. I expect that number will go up, but as of yesterday, that was the number. And another thing that's significant to me, and it's a surprisingly positive significance, of those stations that have committed to go with the program, almost 80% of them have paid for the equipment in full. The others have financed it over one of the two options. And I would say to Todd, you know, Parsons is offering financing. They don't proclaim to be a bank, and that perhaps there is a local lending institution that might have a lower rate. So I think that businesses have to look at all the options, and if there's a sense that this interest rate is too high, I would encourage shopping.
Yeah, on the question of small garages, Sam in Sheffield says the changes will put hundreds of small garages out of business and put vehicle ownership and transportation beyond the reach of thousands of Vermonters. Most small garages cannot afford the software and hardware that the new regulations require. These small garages provide service to decades-long regular customers who can't afford to go to a dealership. For the average Vermonter, each new model year vehicle has superfluous sensors that will require inspection. A good example is the low tire pressure sensor, which only became commonplace within the last decade. These sensors rarely last the duration of a tire, are easily broken when changing tires or doing brake work, and can cost about $250 each. If this law is manifested as proposed, it will hurt the average citizen and continue the increasing flow of money into the hands of big centralized business. Now, Commissioner Ide, just to clear up, you're already supposed to check a light like that, the tire pressure sensor light?
I would have to check this, Jane, but just because I admit that sometimes details escape me, but I'm not clear that that's a failure, but I could be wrong on that, so I want to be sure that I talk to one of my professionals.
And you're not clear on whether it would be a failure under the new system? Is there a change in that?
There is no change in the system, as I said earlier.
Okay, so whatever the pass or fail is for that issue already is exactly the same under the new tablet system.
Yes, your point is perfect.
So Darcy emailed us to say the owner of my inspection garage was told by the Vermont State Inspector that, quote, they didn't want there to be any cars on the road that were more than 6 years old. Given the lack of public transportation in the rural areas of this state, such an attitude is a terrible hardship on the poor and elderly. So carefully maintaining an older car will be penalized. This is a terrible policy. We've heard from a number of people who think or worry or suspect that this is a way to get older cars off the road. Is it?
I don't subscribe to that in the least. This is a way to have safe cars on the highway just as they are today. The standards have not changed. And I have heard those same comments. I don't know where they might have started, but certainly there are a number of older cars on Vermont roads that have been perfectly maintained and repaired, and they pass a state inspection, and we're thrilled with that. Nothing has changed in that attitude.
We just have a couple minutes left, but I want to ask some questions about inspecting at all. A lot of listeners have been asking us, why are we doing this in the first place? Herman says, why in these tough budgetary times do we even have such an antiquated process? Many states have no inspection mandate. Steve says, why do newer cars need to be inspected? Is a 1 or 2 year old car ever in such desperate need of repair that a vehicle inspection is necessary to reveal that? Why doesn't Vermont institute an inspection sticker good for 4 or 5 years from the date of manufacture, like some other states? Also, if someone were to buy a used car less than 5 years old, an inspection sticker could be issued that's still good for 5 years from the date of manufacture. And Gordon in the Northeast Kingdom says, if you can afford a new car, this won't cause you any hardship. For the rest of us, this will place the unfair burden of having a perfect car to get to work or putting food on our tables. It's my understanding that we are one of only 17 states with this type of auto inspection. Is there any proof that we've improved safety with our current system? I believe our current system should be scrapped, as New Jersey did, and issue citations on our roadway for defective equipment instead. What about the idea of just dismantling the inspection system or changing it?
One of the issues that the legislature and the administration would have to consider under that scenario is the financial implications to the transportation fund. Currently, the fee that DMV collects for is $6 per inspection sticker. And that, of course, is revenue that's used to fund the transportation system and to meet our obligation for federal match. So it is a component of the revenue stream. Other states have moved away from it. Some states have added an inspection. All I know is that I'm expected to administer the program as it is existed today until the legislature changes it.
Do you feel free to say whether you think it's a good system or not?
I think it's a great system. I want my family to meet safe vehicles. I'm in the fortunate position of being a grandfather, and I want to be sure that my children meet safe vehicles. I want to be sure they're in safe vehicles. And as I said earlier, as the Motor Vehicle Commissioner, I have a very high responsibility to the safe movement of people and goods, and my primary responsibility has to be for the innocent person in the lane that's meeting traffic.
Robert Ide is the Commissioner of the Department of Motor Vehicles. Thank you very much for taking the time to talk with us.
Thank you, Jane. It was a pleasure.
And we will put a link up for more information for people who still have questions about this vehicle inspection program. Maybe we can even do a little bullet point fact check here as we look at the new inspection system due to go online in mid-March. Coming up, what would it take to close the Windsor prison and make some of the other changes to the Corrections Department that Governor Scott has proposed? You're listening to Vermont Edition. This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. In his budget address on Tuesday, Governor Phil Scott made several recommendations about the state's corrections system. He proposed closing the Southeast State Correctional Facility in Windsor, and he called for expanding the state's electronic monitoring and home detention program. Scott said these and other changes could save around $5 million. Joining us now to discuss the details of these proposed changes is Vermont Corrections Commissioner Lisa Menard. Commissioner Menard, welcome back to Vermont Edition.
Hi, Jane. Thank you.
So the Windsor facility, Governor Scott proposed closing it. Can you tell us a little bit about what this facility is and why it's the highest cost of all of the male prisons?
Sure, I'd be glad to. The facility itself houses about 100 inmates. It was established in 1935. It's the Windsor Prison Farm. It was the farm that was created for the original Windsor Prison. It has had several iterations of uses for the Department of Corrections. Most recently, the types of people who are there are those who are held past their minimum pending finding housing. And there are a few work camp eligible inmates as well there. The property itself still has a great number of farm buildings on it that are under historical preservation. Part of the reason that the per capita is so high at that facility, and it's $75,000 per inmate per year at that facility, is based on how the property is configured. The housing units are separate in separate places, so the staffing needs to be higher to be in each of the units that need to be watched. The yard is quite large. There's a large perimeter fence that needs to be staffed. And because it is a 100-bed facility, you know, you're providing all the services that need to be held there at an economy of scale for 100 versus, for example, at a Southern State facility where you'd be doing it for over 300. So the costs are less at the larger facilities.
And it's not full at the moment?
It is full at the moment,
it is full. Okay, so all 100 beds are full. So where would these inmates go if the facility is closed?
There are a couple of options there. One, I think you mentioned, and that is the electronic monitoring program expansion program. And that's not to say that these inmates would be released on electronic monitoring. The electronic monitoring program is to expand to a 24/7 supervision of people who are on home detention, which is a status that currently exists and the department has. But the courts have been a little more hesitant to use it because the department is using more of a passive monitoring system versus an active monitoring system. So we hope that at least half or up to 50 people that would be on detention could be monitored through this program. And we also intend to, as I think you know, there were conversations around the St. Johnsbury work camp last year, and there are conversations around repurposing 50 beds there. And those 50 beds could be used to house 50 inmates that are in the Windsor facility.
Would any or could any of the inmates at the Windsor facility wind up going out of state?
It is possible, but it is less likely that those particular inmates would, because they're being housed because they lack housing. It would not it would not help them to find housing better if we sent them out of state. That being said, it is possible that some could end up out of state if they had not been able to propose, you know, a residence to be checked in at least 6 months, for example.
Or could other prisoners be sent out of state if they're sort of bumped out of where they are now by people being moved from the Windsor facility?
Yes, it is possible that there could be a slight increase out of state, although it is not what we are working towards, but it certainly is possible.
You mentioned the changes to the home monitoring system. Does having more people at home rather than in facilities pose any security risks? I mean, people always worry.
Yeah, and I understand that. I would say, I would give a couple pieces of information there. One is a recent report that was published by the Pew Charitable Trust. This is a large organization that analyzes government function and efficiencies. And what this particular report was around the reduction in the use of incarceration across the U.S. and the correlating crime rate. Vermont was second in the U.S. For the greatest reduction in use of incarceration. We were 21% reduction in the past 5 years. During that same 5 years, the crime rate decreased by 36%. So it, at least from my perspective, it shows that when you apply evidence-based practices, you look at what is the right amount of supervision and you utilize the best practice. You don't necessarily, for every offender, have to use a jail cell to keep people safe. That being said, to be clear, there are people who clearly need to be in jail and would not be eligible for these types of programs.
This is not something that the governor talked about in his budget address at all, but in reference to the number of prisoners we have out of state, that number has been declining over the years, but we still do have a couple hundred who are in prisons out of state in Michigan. And our contract with the GEO Group to house those inmates in Michigan is not going to be renewed after 2 years. Can you talk a little bit about where things stand and what might happen?
Sure. To your first point, absolutely. Like about 5 years ago, we had, I believe, close to 700 inmates out of state. We're now at 265 inmates out of state. Our current contractor has decided that at the end of June of this year, they will not be exercising the renewal. And that is based kind of on what we just talked about, that our numbers have gone down so dramatically. We have 265 inmates in a facility that was built for 1,900 people. So what we are doing currently is working with our contractor to see if they have other options that they will present. We will also have to look at bids that we received through the last time we posted this for bids, because it's within a reasonable time period to look at those bids again. And obviously, we're continuing our efforts to safely re-enter people where appropriate and to assist people in finding houses, you know, where possible. And clearly, that's a real barrier that's been difficult for people in general. The barrier of a criminal record certainly makes it harder.
Is there any chance, Commissioner Menard, that at the end of this contract we could see no more prisoners out of state, that we could actually have all of our prisoners in the state of Vermont, or are you definitely going to need an out-of-state contract?
I think we'll always need an out-of-state contract. I think we strive, as is obvious by the reduction from 700 to 265, we strive to have the inmates in Vermont. That being said, that is not necessarily always going to be possible. There are inmates that, due to the severity of their crime, their public notoriety, the length of their crime, we will need to have inmates placed out of state. So we'll always need some form of out-of-state agreement.
Commissioner Menard, before I let you go, going back to some of the proposals from Governor Scott, closing the correctional facility in Windsor, expanding electronic monitoring and home detention, and a couple of other changes, do you agree with everything the governor has proposed?
I do. I think if we're looking at closing a facility, to close the one with the highest per capita and some significant deferred maintenance makes sense. And I certainly agree with the electronic monitoring. I think that for those offenders who can safely be supervised in the community, it's the appropriate thing to do.
Lisa Menard is the commissioner of the Department of Corrections. Thanks very much for talking with us today.
Thank you, Jane.
All right. Well, in addition to changes in corrections, Governor Scott unveiled a major education plan in his budget address. As a start, Scott wants to mandate that all school budgets be level funded next year. We're going to take a close look at the governor's plan tomorrow on Vermont Edition, and we will be looking at the pros and cons, who doesn't like this plan, and getting the administration's perspective on what is good about it from their point of view, at least. You can send your questions and comments to Vermont Edition at vpr.net, and then be sure to listen live tomorrow at noon. Vermont Edition is produced by Rick Singeri, Sam Gail Rosen, and Meg Malone. Jake Rusnak directed the show, and our executive producer is Patty Daniels. I'm Jane Lindholm. Thanks for listening.